Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Ireland's immigration policy is based on rules. It's fair to those who come here to work, study or join family, so long as they do so legally. It's firm and tough on those who do not. Those are the words of the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, who was defending Ireland's immigration system, which has been under huge strain of late and at the centre of much political controversy. Well, in a moment, we're going to hear from Senator Barry Ward from Fine Gael and Padraig Tobin, leader of Aintu, to debate just how well it's working. But first, Daniel Murray, political correspondent with the Business Post, is with me to bring us some of the facts around all of this. Good morning, Daniel.
Morning, Claire.
So we want to get some of the numbers from you first on this. How many people are coming here to Ireland on visas and how many are looking for asylum on an annual basis?
So the last big immigration survey that was done by the Central Statistics Office was done late last year, and it reflected the 12 months between April 2022 and April 2023. And it showed that in total there was 141,000 immigrants had entered the Republic over those 12 months, which was, by the way, the most that had entered since the Celtic Tiger years. So a breakdown of that 140,000, around 60,000 or so are either returning Irish or people coming from common travel areas, so the EU or the UK, and they'd be coming for work or for study purposes, or obviously with returning Irish, just returning home. And then around 30,000 will be coming on work permits from outside of the EU. So the primary countries there being India, Brazil, Pakistan, the Philippines, and working in sectors like technology, health and agriculture primarily. So with those figures, that's about half of the 140,000 that are coming through what would be called traditional migration pathways. Then you get into what are called irregular migrants. So in those particular 12 months between April 2022 and April 2023, there were 42,000 Ukrainians arrived. Now, we know in the meantime that figure has increased greatly. Over 100,000 have arrived since the outbreak of the war. But in and around 40, 50,000 a year have been arriving over the last 2 years. And then finally, you're into that final category, which is international protection applicants from other countries seeking asylum. So any other countries outside of Ukraine, pretty much, and obviously non-EU countries. And that's around 13,000 people, 13,200 last year that applied for international protection here.
And what countries in the main are they coming from when they're seeking international protection?
So when they're seeking international protection, there are a couple of countries. Nigeria is one of the primary ones. Georgia is another one. Afghanistan has been a big country in recent years. So a number of countries. It changes year to year which countries up the top of that list, but those would be certainly countries that frequently are up the top of that list.
And in Ireland here, we have a long list of designated safe countries of origin. Now, if you come from one of those countries that we deem safe, how does that change the process for you as someone who's looking for international protection?
Yes, we do. We have a list of countries that we call safe. And this basically means that the minister has declared that there is generally no persecution, no torture or no inhuman or degrading treatments happening in those countries. And therefore, by default, applications would be considered to be coming from a safe country. You can still apply for international protection if you are coming from a safe country of origin, but you have to submit serious personal grounds for why you couldn't be returned and why it wouldn't be safe for you to be returned. So there was a slightly higher bar there. A new procedure that was implemented in 2022 by the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, was to accelerate application procedures for people coming from safe countries. And I understand that most of those applications now are dealt with quite quickly in the space of about 3 months.
Right. So let's then, Daniel, look at a case where the application for international protection is rejected. What happens?
So if an application for international protection is rejected, you can, of course, appeal that in the first place. And that appeal process itself can take 6 months or longer in some cases. But if that is rejected, then you can avail of a process known as voluntary return. So you can basically leave of your own accord and tell the authorities that you are doing that. So in that circumstance, you're not being deported, but you're kind of warned that if you don't take this option, you will be deported. So if you don't opt for voluntary return and leave the country of your own accord, then you are issued a deportation order. And this is basically you've been ordered to leave the country by the immigration authorities. If you don't do that, then you can have your deportation enforced. And the vast majority of people are expected to kind of self-deport in those circumstances. And if not, will be followed up with a deportation enforcement.
So is it fair to say then that the state relies on people making the decision to remove themselves from Ireland if their application is turned down?
It does. That is the kind of default of the system at the moment, is that the state relies on people to remove themselves. First of all, to take part in voluntary return, and then subsequent to that, when you've been issued a deportation order, to remove yourself. But the state then will try to enforce deportation orders if people haven't voluntarily removed themselves. But the numbers of enforced deportations are very small in the scale of things, which begs the question of whether or not people really are removing themselves.
Can you give me a sense of what life would be like if I decide, despite the fact that my application for asylum is refused, I decide to stay in Ireland? What is my life like?
Well, you're now an illegal migrant in the country, and you effectively have to evade the state authorities. So it's very difficult to engage with the state. It could be difficult to get, you know, medical help to attend hospitals. It's difficult to engage with the state to get proper employment that is above board. So you're living as an illegal migrant. Now, of course, there are many ways to be able to do that and to work around that. And people do that here and all over the world. But it becomes a life of secrecy and a life of trying to evade any interaction with the state.
Another issue I want to touch on with you, Daniel, is this one where people have been arriving at Dublin Airport, and then when they seek international protection, they don't have documents with them. Do you have figures on that?
Yes. So for 2023, for people who arrived at Dublin Airport seeking asylum, over 70% of them, or just about 70% of them, did not present with identification. So you can see there that obviously changes year to year as well. And it is something that seems to have increased in recent years. So a major problem for the government with those kind of figures. But of course, not having identification doesn't mean that you can't then apply for international protection, but it can make proving your story and proving where you're coming from more difficult.
All right, well, let's discuss all of those issues. Daniel, thank you very much. Daniel Murray there, political correspondent with the Business Post. Pather Tobin is here with me, as is Barry Ward. And Pather, you've been critical of the pace at how quickly the system works for people who are applying for asylum, isn't that right?
Yeah, so there's three aspects that I have difficulty with. I think that the pace of the process of the application is extremely slow still in the state. I think it's still
a lot of improvements, though.
There has been improvements, but still, last year, over 5,000 people, it took well over 2 years for their application to be processed. 1,000 people, it took over 3 years to have their application processed, and this is the first decision. This doesn't include the appeals. And I know, for example, last year there's still a person who is waiting 6 years for their first application to be processed. So that means there is a significant number of people in the country who the state has to provide accommodation for, who may not actually be successful in the long term in their application for asylum here. And it means that we have to provide more accommodation to accommodate those individuals within the system itself.
How do you address that point, Barry, that the system is still, despite improvements, too slow?
Well, it'll always be too slow. You cannot process the application there and then. There are certain elements of this that involve fair procedures, and it'll take time. But what I think is important is, I think over the last decade or so, we have had huge delays in this. But there's an investment since 2002 of over a 95% increase in staff. So it's now over 400 people working in the International Protection Office. They have now cut those waiting times down. And while you might be able to find isolated cases, the reality is that the average time for processing an application has gone from 4 years to one. And in fact, this year it's anticipated that'll be closer to 6 months. Mm-hmm. So it's more than just improvements. It's a sea change in terms of the way they're dealt with. And it's much, much faster. But of course, there are still people who are in the tail end of that, but they will be flushed out, I hope, in the coming months.
Can we talk about deportation? Pather, I know you asked a question, didn't you? A parliamentary question on this. 800 deportation orders last year, and how many were deported?
Yeah, so there's about 33 in the question that I received from the government that were actually physically deported by the state.
And what do you want to happen? Do you want the guards escorting 800 people out of the country?
So this is one of the biggest problems of the government's policy, to be honest. This is, most people can't understand how the majority of deportations in the state is a voluntary system in this state. It's incredible because it really damages the integrity of the government's process from start to finish. So over the last 5 years, only 15% of the deportations have been confirmed by the government. So I've asked the minister, what about the rest? She said that there are voluntary deportations. And I said, do you have any system to confirm at the ports that these people have left? And she said, no, there is no confirmation system at the airports or the ferry ports to confirm that these people have left.
So you're not looking for the guards to escort people. You're saying we need to have an eye on the numbers. We need to be checking whether the people who've been told, no, you can't stay here, are actually leaving. That's what you're asking.
At the very limit, at the very base of this, we need to be able to confirm that people are leaving. And we can't confirm that is the case at the moment. And the fact that, you know, the minister has given an amnesty to 8,000 undocumented migrants in the country shows that there are many undocumented migrants in the country who are simply not leaving after the process is over. And given the crisis that we have in accommodation, given the capacity issues, it's just startling that the government cannot get it together to confirm when a person leaves the country
or
not.
OK, that seems like a fairly reasonable ask, Barry, that we would know that the people who have been refused asylum are actually leaving.
Yeah, well, first of all, Pater mentioned the figure of 857 deportation orders last year. In fact, only 765 of them related to failed international protection applicants. But can I just clarify, a deportation order is simply a notice that you no longer have leave to remain in the state. You can't stay, you must go. That's what it is. And I think a fair comparison might be, let's say, to a planning enforcement notice. You build an extension on your house in breach of planning conditions. The council doesn't arrive at your house with a bulldozer to knock it down. The first thing they do is they send you a notice saying that is in breach of your planning, you need to remove it. If you don't remove it, then the council or the authority will take action
against
you.
But this is Pather's point. That check is not happening.
Well, that's what I'm going to
come to. Because we don't have a system.
You heard what Daniel said there about how difficult it is to live here under the radar as an undocumented person. I think it's harder, and there's lots of evidence that suggests it's harder in a country like Ireland than it is in most larger countries because we're a smaller community. So living under the radar is hard. The GNIB, the Garda National Bureau, Immigration Bureau, which has responsibility for deportations, did a test over a number of cases in the last year, and they are satisfied that the vast majority of people have left the state. But what Pather is looking for is a situation where people somehow must record that they've left, when in fact we have an open border with Northern Ireland. Most people will go over the border, they will leave the country, and the reality is the GNIB, who are responsible, are satisfied that most of those people left.
On 2 points in that, first of all, we had a shocking situation where people were being smuggled into the country there in Rosslare just very recently, and thankfully a horrendous situation was averted when they brought their attention to the authorities. But of those 14 people who came, 8 of those people then left and fled the authorities' situation. So even that sample shows you that the Gardaí themselves are not really in control of the figures on that. But, you know, this is a good point about the north of Ireland, because it's a question that we've asked over and over again. The government currently have a system whereby 76% of people who apply for asylum in the state don't apply at an airport, don't apply at a ferry port. They apply now at the International Protection Office. And when I asked the minister, how did they get into the country? She said she doesn't know. And she even went as far as to say she doesn't even ask them at that office when they apply how they came into the country. Now, again,
will you explain to people why that's so important?
I think that's startling because it means we don't know how people are coming into the country. And we need to know, because we need to know how many people are being smuggled. We need to know how many people are being trafficked. We also need to know how many people are coming from Britain via the north of Ireland. We need to know how many people are coming in, maybe from they may have come to the country with a holiday visa or a working visa. Those visas may have expired, and now they're looking to apply for asylum. How can you manage a system if you're not even measuring what's going on in the system? And the minister herself says in a parliamentary question to me, she says, they're not even asking 76% of the people who came in last year how they come into the state.
Why? Can you understand why we wouldn't ask that question?
Well, the first thing is, if somebody's staying here illegally at, or after an expired work or holiday visa, we do know how they come into the system. And it's not the case that there's not monitoring. There is monitoring. You can ask that question. I wouldn't have any difficulty with it being added to the international protection application process to ask the question as to how somebody came here. But it's not a reliable statistic because you don't know whether they're going to tell you the truth or not. But it is not the case, because Pater would set out this narrative that there's a free-for-all, that nobody knows what's happening. And that's not the case. In fact, there is very good control, and the system actually works very well, because the purpose of the International Protection Office and the application system is for people to apply for international protection, for their applications to be processed and a decision to be made. Not only is that happening, but it's now happening quicker than it has ever happened.
Can I ask you about people who decide to stay here illegally when they have been refused on appeal permission to stay in this country? Are you suggesting that they can have a full and productive life in Ireland under those circumstances, Pather?
No, I don't envy anybody in those circumstances. It's a disaster situation. Sure, Irish people have spent, you know, decades in the States undocumented, unable to return home for parents' funerals, etc. It's a shocking situation to be in.
But you say it's happening.
It's a situation the government's allowing to happen. And the idea that there's no point in even asking people because they might lie. Yeah, but the inference was that even if you ask people, they might lie. That was exactly what was said. And it is a nonsense to say that we don't even ask people because they might lie. It's really important we know how people come into the country. And the way you solve that, actually, is you make sure that they apply for asylum at the airport and at the ports. Because then everybody else who hasn't applied at those locations has either come in through the north, has been smuggled in, or has come in on an expired visa. And then you'll be able to deal with that cohort in a different way, in a way that's more appropriate in finding out the truth.
How do you deal with people who are coming in via Northern Ireland? Well, what do you do? And are we really going to go back to having a conversation about a border here?
No, I'm a United Irelander, as you know yourself. There's no way I'd tolerate a border in Ireland.
But I don't know how else you would deal with it.
We have a border between Ireland and Britain for sausages, Claire, at the moment. And the European Union and Britain have agreed to that. Mm-hmm. Now, the idea that we can't have a border for smuggled people coming into the country or trafficked people coming into the country is illogical. Okay, the DUP are not going to agree with it.
Well, I was just going to say the DUP would be very unhappy with you for suggesting this.
For sure. But listen, I think the European Union and the British government and the Irish government realise that the DUP cannot block an IRC border for products. So I think, you know, and it's in Britain's interest also to have an integrity to their system. And I think the Irish government should start to work with our London counterparts to make sure that we have that process, that we know who's coming onto the island.
Barry?
Well, again, Pat is suggesting that there are all these people who are being trafficked into the country because, I think, if I understood what he's saying, because there aren't border checks. Now, the alternative, I agree with him. I also don't want to see a border between Ireland and the North. If you want to get a bus from Belfast to Dublin, there should be no restriction on doing that. But if you want to start to monitor people coming into the country, the reality is what you will end up doing is racially profiling people. And that has happened in the past as they come over the border. And it's very important that we don't go down that road. But I think Pater is creating a problem where there is none here. As I said, the process is working insofar as people who make the application are processed in accordance with the rules that are set down both in Irish law and international law. That processing is happening. It's successful. Decisions are made. If you're unsuccessful, you have to leave. If you aren't, you get to stay.
You're creating a problem where there isn't one.
We're just on the issue of trafficking. Now, I don't want to conflate trafficking and smuggling of people because they are different, etc. But Ireland is on a watch list currently in relation to trafficking. The US State Department saying Ireland is not doing what's necessary to tackle trafficking. There was 1,000 court cases over the last 10 years in terms of trafficking in this country. Only 3 convictions. I have never seen a conviction rate as low in any other form of crime as there is in trafficking at the moment in this country. So this government is extremely poor in relation to protecting people. And it's also relates to the people themselves who are being trafficked.
I just want to go back to Daniel's figures, because if we were hugely attractive as a place for asylum seekers to come and to stay, would we not see more coming? Because just going back on his 2022 to 23 figures, 140,000 in total coming in here, 60,000 of whom were Irish, EU or UK, 30,000 on work permits, and just 13,000 were international protection applicants.
See, our policy is one of compassion and one of common sense. We understand in this country that there is a difficulty with capacity at the moment. There's 600 people in tents on our streets currently. There are 5,000 people in direct provision centres who have actually been regularised but can't leave those areas. The Taoiseach himself has stated in the last week that he seeks to potentially spend money in future so that people don't have to be brought into this country because of capacity issues. So all we're saying is, let's make the system properly efficient and effective and be able to differentiate between those who need help and those who
don't
need help.
But are you saying that the system as it currently stands is attractive to people to come here? You're going to be in emergency accommodation and getting €38 a week.
I'm saying that the system doesn't efficiently and effectively differentiate between those who need help and those who don't. And I'm saying that the government could actually affect change significantly in that and allay the fears of many, many people across the country who do have real fears here. And if the government doesn't understand that, the next question I would say is that the government need to engage with people, they need to consult with people, and they need to listen to people. And that's the other part of this debate that the government are failing on. Because
I want to stick with the system, because that's a very straightforward point that Pather makes, that the system cannot differentiate between people who need help, Barry, and those who do not.
Well, the system does. I mean, the international protection system is designed to identify people who qualify for international protection. They are people who are persecuted or discriminated against because of religion, ethnicity, sexual orientation, whatever it might be. So there is a set of rules, a set of criteria that are examined by the International Protection Office. So when people come in, that is the basis of their application. Now, I don't know if Pat is going beyond that and saying that there's some people who are needier than others, and that's undoubtedly true. If you're coming from a war-torn area, you might be suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, you might be injured, there are all kinds of other things, you might be a victim of all kinds of heinous crimes. In actual fact, in my own experience, for example, in Black Rock, where a number of international protection applicants have arrived, there is on-site counselling for those people there. That's just one example. But it's not the case. I mean, Pat talked about compassion. That is, the system is based on the fact that we not only have obligations, but we want to accommodate people who need protection.
I want to ask you about the documentation issue, and we got that figure again from Daniel that 70% of people who are applying for asylum don't have their documents. What is going on there, Pather?
Yeah, so this is an incredible situation, and I think there's about 3,500 people came through Dublin last year, Dublin Airport, without their travel documentation. Now, I do understand that there are some occasions where people leaving Afghanistan or Syria won't be able to collect their documentation before they leave their home country, etc. But we do also know that anybody getting onto a plane from another European country has to have travel documents to get onto the plane and come to Ireland. And if a person is losing purposefully their travel documents, or damaging the travel documents, are coming in on fake travel documents, that's a problem that we need to fix.
What is going on there, do you think?
Yeah, I think that is a fair criticism. There are no direct flights from Syria or Afghanistan. So the reality is that the vast majority of people arriving into Dublin Airport are coming from another European Union state or another safe country. People who destroy their documents, and by the way, those figures that Daniel's mentioned also include people who have identifiably false documents. So it's not necessarily people who've... So in that instance, for example, you can get on a plane in Paris or Frankfurt or Amsterdam with a false passport. The airline authority there is not going to understand that it's a false passport. It'll be identified when you get to Dublin. Those people are included in the figures. But whatever the case is, if you arrive here seeking international protection, you must establish your identity. You cannot be granted leave to remain here until the authority are satisfied as to your identity. So the people who are coming here and either destroying documents or falsifying their identity need to understand that they're actually making the process for themselves more difficult and more prolonged. And that is a problem. It absolutely needs to be dealt with. And it's not tolerated.
I think that's the key point. I think some people are damaging their documents, losing their documents, to prolong the process that they're here in Ireland. And there should be a penalty for a person who purposefully tries to damage travel documents.
Try and prove that.
Well, what I'm saying is that if we have a penalty against something, its purpose of the penalty is to inhibit people actually carrying out...
In order to impose the penalty, you've got to prove that somebody purposefully destroyed their documents. Well, how are you going to do that?
Well, if a person's coming into the country and got onto a plane with documents and has no longer a document at the end, we know that they have lost their travel document, and there should be a penalty for that.
But purposefully is the key word there.
The key about it, first of all, in 2002, the Gardaí issued over, I think, close to 1,000 carrier penalties for people who didn't have documents they arrived here. So there's a dual way to approach that. But there is already a penalty in place in real terms for people because, first of all, the prolongation of their application is not a pleasant thing for them, whether they think it is or not. But they are disadvantaged in terms of seeking protection.
We are going to have to leave that there. But thank you both for coming in, Padraig Tobin and Barry Ward. And my thanks also to Daniel Murray for setting out the facts for us at the beginning of that conversation. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.